And welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge and experience and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. And today, we're going to have a conversation with Penny Wong. Penny, you're very much a role model in your industry. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Fritz. Thanks for having me.
And allow me to introduce you to the audience. And I'm just going to give the highlights because there's so much to cover. You have a long background in IT and telco, and specifically in the cybersecurity space. And on your bio on LinkedIn, it says preparing for the AI singularity. That's definitely something we're going to cover. You set up Just Ask Penny. You're based out of Sydney, went to the Uni of Sydney, but also the Future Directors Institute. So there's keep some ambition out there, which I'd like to explore. And for the audience, we met in Borneo in 2013 at the WCIT conference, where we both presented. And no, I'm glad we're able to continue our conversation we had then.
Absolutely.
So,
thanks, Rick.
Penny, let's begin with that. When I go to your LinkedIn page, preparing for the AI singularity, we're going to deep dive in the topic. Why is it in there?
Why is it in there?
Yes.
I've come from five backgrounds: cybersecurity, telecommunications, payments, AI, and everything to do with blockchain, Web3. And I'm bringing everything together. The crazy conversation that I used to have around AI and robots has somehow now become relevant, which is quite interesting. Since I guess ChatGPT dropped last year, I was one of the happiest people alive because now I can stop educating. People can try things on their own and then come to me.
Yeah.
Now, why the topic there is CISO, preparing for the AI singularity. Because I come from a risk viewpoint perspective of how things break and how to secure things, I can see a future where AI can completely get out of control. Now, with that in mind, before AI, I guess the future of AI starts to understand math, because our world is built on math. It would probably start to break encryption before it does good, which is my viewpoint of we need new ways of securing systems, technologies, that is probably not built on what we know today, SSL, because when that breaks, and it's going to be game over for everyone.
Oh, yeah. By for the uneducated, SSL, what does that mean?
It's a security layer on your internet transactions. So the little padlock that you see in your web browser, that is a secure connection to the entity that you're actually engaging in, whether it's your bank or your government, to secure that transmission of data across.
Got it. Thank you.
I see things from a risk-based perspective, where I would generally go into the organization, assess their threat landscape, and then understand what methods or methodologies they could put in, or tools to secure the environments. Now, with the rise of AI, this is going to be really challenging. No one ever thought we'll have to secure data in motion. Mm-hmm. We're now conversing with systems. I mean, everyone now calls it AI. They are intelligent to a point, but they will get intelligent to a point that it surpasses human intelligence. Now, that's where the singularity, the term is coined, where it will go so far ahead that it's smarter than us and we're not going to be able to turn it back. My call out has always been, let's build on new secure infrastructure, which is what people are now calling Web3, which comprises of a number of things. You know, blockchain is an underlying technology, various different payment systems, but it will affect every part of society and every industry. How we do trade finance, how we decentralize science, and so forth and so forth. So I'm not going to get into that there because I can go down five rabbit holes. But that's where the tagline, CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, preparing for the singularity. So I'd like to be in a position where I can help prepare for these potential vulnerabilities and exploits, which could be driven by AI, or bad actors utilizing AI for bad.
Okay. you're painting a bit of a gloomy future, but we'll cover that later. But I was just wondering, I mean, you demonstrate so much passion for technology, for digital technology. Where does this passion come from? How did it start?
Oh, do you really want to go down this path? my father loves science fiction. So
Okay.
when I was three, he used to put me in front of Star Trek. And it was a great babysitting tool for him. And I'd loved it ever since. So my love for science fiction and science and technology was born out of watching pretty much all the Star Trek seasons and a fascination that one day I'd love to bring data from Star Trek to life. And also Kit from Knight Rider, which is another show that they had in the late 80s.
Okay, so that also explains your background you have at the moment.
So this is actually Kylo Ren's ship, not Star Trek. So I switched between Star Trek and Star Wars, depending on the talks that I have. But generally, the security talks I have this background, and this took me through the pandemic, to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, I have to make it fun for everyone as well.
Okay. So, I mean, what you're now describing is the fact that your father put you in front of Star Trek when you were three, got you into this whole cybersecurity space and everything around it. Just out of curiosity, suppose he would have put you in front of another TV show. Do you think you'd still end up here, or not?
It's environmental. I guess it would have been a slower process. The information that Star Trek puts forward, from philosophy to science to looking at our humanity as well, or as species, that played a huge role in my life. Also, my dad's an engineer. I have two older brothers. One's in electrical, the other's in mechanics, and I've ended up on the software side. So that helped as well. They always encouraged me to explore things. I mean, my mum probably was tearing her hair out, but I took everything apart from remote control cars. My brother and I killed the TV, which was a cathode ray tube back then, and we still blame each other. I took my own car apart when I was 18. So that, I guess, environment of some would call it risk-taking, experimentation, but not being yelled at as well, because I always had one or two screws left over. I'm like, okay, well, does it work? It was more of an encouraging environment that I grew up in, fortunately. So I'm thankful for that.
Okay. Was your mother encouraging this, or was she felt lonely with all these geeks around, these people curious, breaking down things?
My mum was probably at her wit's end because the garage was full of all engineering things. At one stage, she freaked out because I wanted to become a mechanic, and I don't think she was too happy. It was a very boyish environment. I settled on software development, which she was okay with. I think she's used to it. She's got a great sense of humor, so I
Okay.
think that worked.
Well, good to know. By the way, when you hear your mother say, "Look, that should not be a career for you," that doesn't sound like say it's a very conservative mindset. Oh, that's not for girls. So, what's your take on
My dad stepped in.
okay.
So my dad used to be the protagonist. You'd say, let me explore, let me do things, let me try. He always encouraged that. But the one thing he always said was, actually both of them agreed, this is your life. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're going to give you as much guidance as possible. This is what we think, but your generation is different. Like I was already playing, like they gave me a computer. They, sacrificed a lot of the income for it because they knew it was the next generation thing, and they didn't understand it. But if I understood it, I'll create my own path. So they supported that. So that for me, I guess, was a huge difference to how other children were brought up. I have friends that their parents said you can only be a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. They hate their jobs. And I've got one close friend. She became a lawyer, but it's not her. She's a creative. She's just a lighthearted person. So she secretly had another job in a creative role for 6 months instead of being a lawyer. But she loves what she does now.
Okay, but coming back to you, I mean, it just oozes out of everything from you that you love talking about and thinking about the impact of digital technology. So you started off actually going to school, to university to study this. How did you start your career? What was the first step?
What was the first step? When I was at uni, I was working full-time as well. And my first job was in retail, but retail in terms of the admin, some of the retail stuff. But then I started to play with the computers. And I didn't know back then, as I was looking at the inventory and, you know, printing all the tickets, I was just looking through the modules. I'm like, oh, this is quite interesting. And I said to the boss at the time, you know, you've got an accounting package here, and I think, I don't know why you're using MYOB and you're using this inventory system. We can probably do it all together and save time. So they said, can you do it? I said, yeah, sure, I can try, I can test it. But I didn't know the impact. One lady got paid, let's say, a very nice amount to do accounting and payroll. Another lady got paid a nice amount of money to do inventory. And here's me, still in uni, working part-time / full-time, because I was still at uni, saying, oh, I can do all this, I can make this all be easier for you guys. When I proved that I could do it, they were so impressed. They said, do you want a full-time job? Well, only if I can do uni as well. Sure, why not? So then they fired the other two ladies. I did not know. Yeah, that was my first job and first experience. In hindsight, had I known more about impacts and this is digital transformation now coming in, because that was a very huge lesson for me. Still young, I'm automating things, great, great, great. But you always need to now consider the impact that it'll have to the rest of the workforce. Again, at 19, you don't understand this stuff, right? You're still too young. I didn't know that until later, like months later. I'm like, oh, what happened to the two ladies? Oh, to my surprise and horror, I thought, oh my God, had I known, I would not have automated. I would have, you know, somehow worked out how to involve them still.
Is that true? Because you've made a career out of turnaround jobs, digital transformation. And with all these turnaround jobs, you see there's going to be, in most cases, people losing a job. There's going to be impact on the organization, on people.
Yeah.
So
eventually
that one experience at 19 didn't stop you from still pursuing that career in changing organizations.
Actually, but it reminded me every single time on how to help.
Yeah.
Because when I do see transformation coming into play, I always do I go over and beyond to make sure people are either upskilled or are given another role in another department. Worst case scenario, I'm actually calling people up, finding them jobs. So I've placed so many jobs just out of the goodness of my heart, because I'm like, I can see that job going. This is coming up. And I'm already calling up either recruiter friends or other friends, and I've placed people in jobs because I know they've got families and they need a job. Throughout my career as well, given up two jobs for elderly people, and I'll never say who they are. They'll never know, but the hiring manager and myself will know. There's two different roles, because I know it's hard as you get older to stay in these roles. That's also another thing leaders need to be cognizant of. When you do look at bringing in technology and AI and automating things, as long as people have good intentions, there's a role for everyone. So whether you can upskill them, include them somewhere else, you know, open up an opportunity elsewhere, you need to remember the people side of things as well. Yeah, it's not all just about business. Yeah.
Okay. Now you've in your career so far, you've taken on a number of these very large turnaround jobs for organizations. How conscious or how well thought do you think these organizations are when they ask you, okay, can you help with this turnaround? Is it because everybody else is doing it, or is there a real vision which means you have to do a digital turnaround?
When I do the turnaround, it means something's fallen over.
Yeah, okay.
Very rarely do I get a nice greenfield, which I'd love, a greenfield project where I get a blank space, blank canvas, and I've set things properly. And the jobs that always have paid well also have been the wheels are falling off. It's a product that needs to be commercialized in enterprise space. Conflict between the technology vendor, the teams, requirements, all sorts. Yeah. So with that, I generally see a lot of things that have gone wrong. Why it's not working. Yeah. And why it's not working generally, it's not the technology, it's the people. I've always come from an engineering side of things to build systems, to integrate to large environments or to create products. But what fails a lot of the times is people's expectations on how technology will be rolled out, because technology only forms 20 to 30% of the actual solution. Everything else, change management, policies, law, you know, the governance around it as well, is huge. And a lot of that is overlooked a lot of the times. Oh, here's blockchain. Oh, here's AI. Now make something of it. Where I'm like, stop, don't do that. I mean, if you do that, in 6 months' time, call me, because I can guarantee you the wheels have probably fallen off. And this is where, I guess, when I do speak to governments leaders who are embarking on that journey, why are you doing it? You know, what problems are you looking to solve, or what opportunities are you looking to open up before you just throw the technology in? Because that's an enabler. It's not always the first thing to solve every problem.
And that, and the why you do something also triggers me. It's a nice segue to a question I have. So how do you find success? What's your definition of success? And also on the projects, how do you have a discussion with organizations when it's going to be successfully completed? Is that because the technology works, or is it something else?
It's generally the whole program. So success could mean the product launches in market and it doesn't fall over. So with that, there's a lot of testing involved. There's a lot of stage gating things as well. A lot of the times, two areas will stop a project. It's always security from InfoSec teams or legal. So at the beginning of each project, I normally engage those two areas. So I've come up with a secret sauce, a recipe, I would say, of how I do things. When I walk into an environment, the first two areas I look for is someone in legal who's possibly going to be across the project, if not find someone, and in InfoSec as well, because that's risk at the end of the day. And the reason why a project doesn't get pushed forward is because of risks, you know, risks that would probably end up in the boardroom. So you need to mitigate those risks early on, would ensure the success of a project. Success also means to me that every party walks away with a level of satisfaction that they also got something out of it. That's positive.
Yeah. Okay, so that's basically stakeholder management.
It is stakeholder management. Okay. I'd like to negotiate win-win situations between supplier and client, regardless of which side of the fence I'm at. It's about doing business in a fair manner. What is fair? And when we talk about partnerships, it's not a supplier. The partnership is they're in for the risk and the reward together. So it's building relationships or rebuilding relationships. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what you just mentioned about your very first job when you were 19, which got two people fired, along this definition of success, was that successful or not?
No, I would say no. If I could do it again, I've always think about this. If I could do it again, I would have made sure those two ladies, had something to go to. If not, then I would have made sure that they are still involved somehow. And I probably would have not. This is probably a tricky question. I probably would not have automated everything at once. Yeah, I would have staged it out. So this is now me protecting people as well. I would have staged it out so then they had time to also evolve. And then I would have stepped out altogether. Okay. So that I would have done it that way, which is why I prefer projects where I come in, fix things, and then I hand it back.
Okay. Would that also mean Would that also mean that if an organization would come up to you, say, can you help with our turnaround? And you see that management has this urge to make this very hard approach, regardless of staff, would you then walk away and say, that's not for me? Or are you kind of trying to convince them to do it differently?
I would probably try and convince them to do differently. As a management consultant, bringing all my skills into play, there's always opportunity that can be created out of anything, through a crisis, through a bad situation. I mean, you can do clever things like, okay, you've got a whole division or a whole team. Let's contact a recruitment company. They can start placing these people ahead of time, and then we can look at a full transition. So there's many ways to actually approach this without, I guess, causing casualties along the way. I understand business is business, but there is a way to do business, but also make sure people are looked after.
Got that.
You just got to think a little bit more logically, a little bit more, you know, yeah.
Okay. Now, to what extent was this a milestone in your life, and what are the big milestones out there? Which, hey, that these for me were turning points, which actually got me to the next phase of my life.
I think the robot was a turning point. When I met Sophia the first time, that was a huge turning point.
Okay. For the people who do not know who Sophia is, what is Sophia?
Sophia the robot has been developed by Hanson Robotics, and I met her back in 2017 off the back of a conference in Singapore that I helped my friend run.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wandered off into the next, section of the event, and I came across the robot. And I saw her, heard of her on TV, but I've never seen a full humanoid robot, like live in front of me. And I went to their stand, SingularityNet. I looked at her and I was just like in awe, because this is exactly what I've been watching on TV in science fiction. This is exactly like Data from Seinfeld, except it's female. So what blurted out of my mouth probably caught the attention of the team. And I said, I think I'm going to build my own boyfriend. it was just the moment thing. And I think it probably was Simone, I'm not sure. One of the guys just cracked up laughing. Then I had a conversation with the team, got to know them. The rest is history. And I've been following them ever since. And the amazing community that, attracted to everything that they're doing as well in that community. Yeah.
Okay. So far you've been inspired by Star Trek. You've been inspired by Sophia the robot. Is that
Yes.
the real source of your inspiration, or are there other sources of inspiration which make you do what you
yes.
want?
Yes. Nikola Tesla
Mm-hmm.
and Leonardo da Vinci, who are multidisciplinary, folk. If I can be a percentage as smart as they, I'll be ecstatic. I would love to actually bring them back to life so I can converse with them.
Okay.
So I had this conversation with a few of my industry colleagues. Let's grab all these techs and inventions, and out of conversational AI and a robot, maybe you can talk to these guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, again, preparing for this talk, if I look at you could say what you're talking about, you also have a vision on the future. You talk about how the world's going to look like in 2050. And maybe briefly share the answer with you. Are you optimistic about what technology is going to bring us, what the future is going to bring us?
I'm always optimistic about the future. It's what you make of it. I'm an eternally positive person. I can make lemonade out of lemons in any situation. And I hope that other people have that view as well. You could turn something bad into something good. I mean, if with that intention, I believe things could be very positive. If more people, thought that way, are more proactive. When it comes to the technology side of things, there's the term that people throw around called Web3, which involves the next stage of the internet. We've gone from what used to be called the Web 1 internet, Web 2 now, Web 1 being, we're able to click on links, and that replaced like encyclopedia. And if you had access to the internet, you could access knowledge, which is fantastic. Web 2, for good or for bad, it gave us the smartphone, social media, you know, again, good or bad, I'm not sure. with it, because we were building so fast, it attracted a lot of flaws, vulnerabilities, and systems, which is why we have so many cybersecurity issues today. Before we fast track to building AI, my call out has always been, look at what's being built in Web3, which is a decentralized web. It is being formed in the view that it'll be a little bit more secure than the Web1, Web2 version. If we build on the new, there's 20 different aspects, depending if you're a technologist, if you're, you know, a change maker, you have different viewpoints on what this technology will bring. When you talk about decentralizing technologies, it means, I guess, access for all of humanity. Science, for instance, is really important. If we didn't have the Human Genome Project, we wouldn't have fast-tracked all the COVID solutions. Now, imagine diseases, where scientists get together to solve the diseases, coming up with vaccines and so forth, or even climate change problems on the decentralized web, like bringing people together, regardless of race, religion, color, geography. That, for me, as an underlying, I guess, enabler, would be a positive future for all of us, for all of humanity. It means that we live on this one planet. How do we effectively coordinate all our resources? Because there is enough for everyone in terms of food, energy, everything. Yeah. So okay. I see a positive side as long as more people get involved in, you know, these things. Yeah. And the conversation just, is promoted in a positive manner. Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe then last question for you. The young people out there listening to this conversation, what would your advice be to them? How could they get involved? There should be, what's your advice?
Yeah. I've always said, I'm not better than anyone. I was just better at Google. So my ability to use technology to access information, now with the rise of LLMs and Bard and ChatGPT, is just taking that to a whole different level. If you've got access to the internet, your education's virtually free, whether you can afford it or not. So there's no excuse. If you can't afford university, there's no excuse that you can't afford, that you can't access the content to learn. So learning is essentially free. And you could be 5 years old or 6 years old. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't stop you. So everyone should be responsible for their own education. That's my
educate yourself. Okay, educate yourself, and then maybe once you're educated, how do you then apply the education? Any thoughts on that?
Just try, talk to people. I mean, there's 8 billion of us in this world, and when I talk to girls in STEM, I've always said, just because one person says you can't do it, it doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means you can't do it with that one person. There's 8 billion other people in this world. So just keep asking. Find your tribe, find people that resonate with what you're about, what your passions are. And with that, you form your own community. You link communities. You learn from each other. And you never stop learning. Don't stop. You're not a tree. keep moving forward, hopefully. But just keep moving, keep learning, keep exploring. I think that's what life is about. You've got to have fun along the way as well. Yeah.
Good advice, Penny. Hey, Penny, well, thank you so much for sharing your time with The Brand Called You and sharing your insights in what you're doing with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Fritz. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.